the same as it does to trees.
آیت الله جوادی آملیدی, the author of the book مفاتیح الحیات, The Keys of Life.
این مفاتیح باید دو جلد باشه, چندین سال این حرف گفته میشه.
This book, مفاتیح, ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح الجنان است, چه فرون دماز و سواب داره فرون روزان است.
One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اون اینه که فرون درختکاری رو کم سواب داره, دعا هم داره, سواب هم داره.
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام اونطوری که اینو گفته بودم گفته دی. اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره, همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری هم ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
أوله يحرق وآخره يورق. It starts off, so coldness does to a tree, coldness, cold weather burns the tree, right? And that's why in autumn, you know, the tree, the leaves of tree fall. أوله يحرق وآخره يورق. And at the end of the season, when spring starts, leaves start to grow again. So that's exactly what's happening to a person's body. Into a person's body, when you are protecting yourself from the beginning of winter, you are protecting your body from it being affected by the cold weather. And then towards the end of the cold season, you are now receiving it and welcoming it by not wearing that much clothes. And of course, that's going to bring about, you know, a kind of positive sustainability, which is a good thing. وَآخِرُهُ يُورِق. يُورِق coming from the word وَرَق, وَرَق الشَّجَر, which means leaves. Now, talking about all of these things and speaking about how we are able to keep ourselves healthy and prevent from sicknesses. Again, here there's a hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam that speaks about تقليم الأظافر وأخذ الشارب, that you cut your nails and you shorten your moustache من جمعة إلى جمعة, from one Friday to another Friday. Well, later on we're going to have a special episode on, you know, what's recommended to do on Fridays. أمان من الجذام, that it is a safety from leprosy. Again, here we're talking about something as simple as cutting nails and it having an effect of keeping you secure and safe from certain sicknesses like leprosy. Or ترك العشاء مهرمة, that if you don't have dinner, it's going to lead you to become feeble and weak and of old age. وَيَنْبَغِي لِلْرَجُلِ إِذَا سَنَّ أَنْ لَا يَبِيتَ إِلَّا وَجَوْفُهُ مُمْتَلِئٌ مِنَ الطَّعَامِ, that an old person, when they reach a certain age of elderness, they should always try to make sure that their stomach is full of foods. والحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
Driving past, walking fast. to the field of dreams. Hear the children's cries.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time. Memories fade like a dusty window pane, and you can't see your past no more. The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there, be there.
Round the World with Reporters.
The Democrat-led lower house of Congress has forced a second impeachment trial in the Senate for ex-President Donald Trump on charges of incitement of insurrection following the deadly protests inside Capitol Hill on January 6th. There is seemingly no chance that a supermajority two-thirds of the Senate, which is evenly split between both parties, will vote to convict Trump this time either. Recent polls show America is almost evenly split on if Trump deserves a conviction, meaning the trial will be yet another highly divisive political event.
I think Democrats are basically taking this opportunity to once and for all kind of like rally around that, like, this person is, like, you know, evil. He's bad for the system. This is a terrible president to send. They're really just trying to hammer down that you can't get away with this stuff. This, and the president in his own words really did, like, rile up these people to come to the Capitol and, you know, wreak havoc. It's more of, I think, what they're going towards is, like, you can't come here and touch us.
Analysts suggest that Democrats may be pushing the trial as a way to weaken the Republican Party by forcing Republicans to openly choose between pro-Trump and anti-Trump factions. Conservatives could be weakened by infighting for years. Trump remains incredibly popular among Republicans, but a conviction would forbid him from holding office and running for president in 2024. Given the record anger, disunity, and polarization, many wonder if a successful conviction could backfire and provoke even greater problems.
All it really does is creates a vacuum for another figurehead to kind of go in there and take control of this mob of quite literally fascist. This is like fascism in actual definition. And what this does is, you know, we know Trump is a con man. We know Trump was often like bumbling his way through things. He was kind of like, you know, a joke, a mockery of the system. This unfortunately creates a vacuum where someone more competent in terms of just, you know, oppression, repression, can take control of this vacuum that Trump is leaving behind.
New President Joe Biden is being criticized for allowing Congress to focus on a trial instead of creating legislation to cope with a raging pandemic and a once-in-a-century economic disaster. Many fear the controversial trial will eliminate willingness for bipartisanship in a Congress in which Democrats have only a very slim margin of control. That's a different agenda than Franklin Delano Roosevelt's first 100 days in 1933, when he rolled out 15 major pieces of legislation, which began the so-called New Deal and economic recovery. The trial will begin on February 8th and must dominate the proceedings of Congress until its conclusion weeks later. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
They are clearly very different issues, but EU foreign affairs ministers have agreed the two main policy areas on which they want to make progress with the United States are climate change and the Iran nuclear deal, officially known as the JCPOA, Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. The ministers have just concluded face-to-face talks on the subjects in Brussels.
From climate change to Iran and JCPOA, and the most important ones, the most urgent ones, and the ministers are ready for a new start.
That new start is necessary because of Donald Trump's hate-fueled anti-Iran campaign during the past 4 years. The former U.S. president pulled Washington out of the nuclear deal in 2018 and imposed unilateral sanctions designed to try and cripple Iran's economy.
Firms across the European Union have made it clear they very much want to do business with the Islamic Republic. Economists say U.S. banking-related sanctions against Tehran are stifling that business.
There is now some optimism that change is coming because Joe Biden has indicated the US will rejoin the nuclear accord, which was signed by Iran and six world powers in 2015 and underpinned by the United Nations. With the possibility that US sanctions against Tehran will be lifted, EU businesses should prepare to start trading, experts suggest.
I think it probably makes sense to move now and to be one of the early players in the right framework, of course.
With a population greater than 80 million people, Iran represents a big opportunity for EU firms, it has been pointed out. The 27-country bloc, which is heavily dependent on energy imports, could also address fuel security issues.
Iran would have its energy fields, its gas and oil, which are huge, some of the biggest in the world, opened again to markets, in particular the European market, which would be, you know, a beneficiary of this.
Tehran says Washington can only rejoin the JCPOA if there are no preconditions. Since entering the White House last week, Joe Biden has already spoken with Boris Johnson and Emmanuel Macron about the nuclear deal. The big unknown right now is, will Biden be willing or able to stand up to those who want to see the agreement completely disintegrate? Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Turkey and Greece held their first direct talk in 5 years over tensions which grew between the two neighboring countries over the past years. Turkey has been at loggerheads with Greece and Cyprus over an energy-rich area in the Mediterranean Sea. Tensions flared up last year after Ankara deployed an exploration vessel to the contested waters. The move foundered plans for the resumption of Athens-Ankara negotiations that had been stalled since 2016. The two sides were still trading barbs in the days leading up to the meetings. Last week, Greek Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis said his country will attend those talks with optimism, but, quote, zero naivety. Issues that are on the agenda of the delegations are bilateral disputes, maritime boundaries, and drilling rights.
In talks with Greece, we hope that the issues will be dealt with within the framework of rights, law, and equity, and that solutions are found. We hope that Greece respects our rights in the Aegean and Eastern Mediterranean and avoids actions that may cause misunderstandings.
The meetings were held with international optimism as well, especially from the EU. Analysts say this whole meeting was due to the bloc's pressure on both sides and voiced concerns over the delegations failing to reach an agreement.
The two sides met to agree on several points. Greece wants to discuss East Mediterranean and Turkey wants to discuss arming Aegean islands. Therefore, they will need more time to reach a common ground, and I think it's hard for both sides to reach an agreement, just like it was in the previous talks. I think the talks are being held mainly due to the EU pressure.
This is the 61st negotiations between the two, as talks were initiated in March 2002 and stopped in 2016 without reaching an agreement. Hopes seem high about the outcome of the talks, but given previous experiences, observers say the disputes between Turkey and Greece need more than this to be resolved. Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Iran is now capable of relaying messages that are impervious to hacking. The method is called quantum cryptography. The new technique is used to ensure the absolute confidentiality of information transmitted between two parties by exploiting the random behavior of elementary particles, namely photons.
The new method uses what we call quantum entanglement of photons to encode messages that can never be cracked by a third party. It's a totally new chapter in cryptography, and we just did it. We first built the lab-scale device in 2018, and tonight the first industrial version was successfully used for a longer distance.
The encoded messages were transmitted between Tehran's Milad Tower and the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, which are over 1.5 kilometers apart. Experts say the Iranian device can transmit encrypted messages within a maximum of 7 kilometers at this point, This is why the device's foreign counterparts can communicate messages within over 100 kilometers. Officials say they're working on more capable quantum cryptographers that would transmit secure messages between Tehran and Fordo nuclear facility, which is some 300 kilometers away.
In the next step, we will relay quantum encrypted messages between Milot Tower and Azadi Tower, which are 7 kilometers apart. This will happen in 5 months. The last step will be to transmit entangled photons using optical fiber from Tehran to Fordo nuclear site. This will be possible in 1 or 2 years.
Quantum entanglement was first observed by German physicist Albert Einstein a century ago, when he witnessed that any change in one of the two entangled particles leads to an immediate response in its pair, even if they're separated light years away from each other. Baffled by the phenomenon, Einstein called it spooky action at a distance. Although the process has been formulated mathematically, logically, it's still unfathomable. Today, the phenomenon is widely used not only in quantum encryption, but in biology, computation, and space technologies.
The random behavior of subatomic particles is still a mystery. But scientists have managed to tap into a range of its applications, including quantum cryptography. Officials say Iran is now among the few countries that possess the technology. What's ahead is to generate such uncrackable codes for longer distances. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
On the Global Day of Action for Yemen, Yemenis from all walks of life took the streets in the capital Sana'a and other major cities to denounce the U.S. terrorist designation of the Ansarullah movement. The demonstrators voiced their support for the Ansarullah movement and called on U.S. administration to reverse the decision.
The demonstration comes as a reaction to 6 years of killing, blockade and targeting of Yemen with barges, planes and missiles. People here are against the U.S. move, viewing it as a meddling in their internal affairs.
The Yemeni people came out to send this clear message that they will not sit back against the growing pressure. They rallied to denounce the U.S. policies and hold it accountable for most of the pressure imposed on them over the past years.
Demonstrators also confirmed that the Ansarullah movement is an inseparable part of Yemen and they are determined to defend Yemen against the Saudi-led coalition's war. Earlier, over 170 Yemeni NGOs condemned U.S. terrorists designation of Ansarullah.
U.S. serves as the main source of terrorism in the world. It is a great Satan. America is the main sponsor of Daesh, Al-Qaeda, and all Takfir groups in the region.
Yemenis will survive the unjust pressure imposed on them. They will not give up resistance and will continue to fight for their independence and dignity.
Since the beginning of 2015, Yemenis have been suffering from war and siege imposed by the U.S.-backed Saudi-led coalition, during which war crimes were committed and international humanitarian law was violated by killing thousands of women and children.
Yemenis say the U.S. decision is not against a specific group, but rather against a nation severely suffering from war and the blockade imposed by Washington's allies in the region. Abdulatif Al-Washalif, Sana'a.
Together against poverty, Iran's volunteer Basij Force organization has launched a charity campaign that aims to identify and help the needy from different religious minorities. The humanitarian move was announced during a press conference attended by representatives of Christian and Jewish communities in Iran's parliament.
I should thank the Basij Force for this benevolent act, where it factored out the issue of faith and focused on humanity in its charity affairs. The Armenian community has always considered Iran a home, and this will definitely make the recipients of charities happier.
Philanthropy has been a common feature of Iranians since the ancient past. U.S. Jews have been living peacefully in Iran since 2,700 years ago. Today, we witness this friendship and brotherhood in this act of benefaction.
The aid includes staple food and other basic needs, along with cash handouts that cover an average family's monthly spending. The Basij Force says the charity move comes as many families are suffering under growing economic pressure, stemming from inflation and exacerbated by the coronavirus pandemic.
We hope that the unwelcome virus will soon be eliminated, but for now, we cannot ignore the fact that many people have lost a significant portion of their income due to the pandemic. and it's upon us to extend the hand of help to them, no matter what religion they practice and what color their skin is.
Iran is a predominantly Muslim country, but it's also home to followers of other religions, such as Jews, Christians, and Zoroastrians. Organizers here say, regardless of their religious beliefs, these minorities are Iranians. They believe such humanitarian events strengthen national bonds and foster peaceful coexistence. Organizers say humanitarian efforts transcend faith and ethnicity. This is especially the case during the pandemic, which has gripped all people, many of whom have lost their income and now depend on such donations to make ends meet. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Revocation of autonomous status, unprecedented security clampdown, then the COVID pandemic. Last 17 months have been full of darkness and uncertainty in Indian-controlled Kashmir. The months-long lockdown has left the region's economy shattered. According to official statistics, the economy suffered losses of over $5 billion. Tourism industry, which is considered the mainstay of Kashmir's economy, has been one of the worst sufferers. Now, following months of lull, Kashmir's tourist hubs are coming back to life. Winter snow has brought tourists back to the picturesque Himalayan region and raised hope among those associated with the tourism industry. The world-famous ski resort Gulmarg is abuzz with tourists these days.
The losses are humongous. And as far as expectation is concerned, Kashmir tourism is all about hope and expectations. I mean, for the last 20-25 years, entire world knows that we have been running tourism in very, very challenging situations.
Tourism industry, particularly hoteliers in Kashmir, suffer huge losses, first due to scrapping of Article 370 and then due to global pandemic. New Year has brought glamour of hope with tourists returning to Kashmir.
Yeah, this is the first time I'm here. I'm very happy from the core of my heart. I always feel like I'm on the ninth cloud.
The tourism department is organizing various events in a bid to attract more tourists in order to revive the industry. After Winter Games, Gulmarg is now hosting snow sculpting competition. Braving sub-zero temperature, the participants are working with great passion to produce some of the finest works of art. Meanwhile, a 31-member Indian parliamentary delegation is also here to promote tourism. The visiting delegation also met various stakeholders of the region's tourism sector. Situated at an altitude of 2,730 meters above sea level, Gulmarg boasts of one of the highest cable cars in the world. With breathtaking slopes, Gulmarg is one of the finest ski destinations in the world and the heartland of winter sports in India.
Wrapped in a thick carpet of snow, the ski resort of Gulmarg presents a delightful picture these days. It offers best slopes for skiers and attracts sports and adventure lovers from across the world, and also raises hopes for tourism revival in Kashmir. Sidri Safi from Gulmarg Ski Resort in Indian-administered Kashmir.
The number of people sleeping on the streets at night across the European Union is growing by the day amid the pandemic. Welfare systems are under enormous strain. We have been speaking to one homeless man in Brussels who is finding it difficult to acquire emergency accommodation.
It's very hard in the cold, in the winter. It's very hard to feel good, to find somewhere. It's very difficult.
A debate on the worsening social crisis in the EU resulting from COVID-19 has been held in the European Parliament.
We have a problem here. The slow, sluggish bureaucracy of the European Union is not compatible with emergencies like the one we face today.
Governments in the EU are being urged to submit pandemic recovery plans to the European Commission so that €750 billion in available funding can be released without any further delay.
Millions of people lost already their jobs. And they are mainly the low-skilled, the low-paid workers, the temporary workers, the young on precarious work?
The European Parliament debate was told the EU social crisis could last for many years unless action is taken to save economies.
Thousands of businesses have temporarily or permanently closed. Millions of Europeans have lost their jobs and livelihoods.
Many EU legislators say the 27-country bloc's vaccination programme is being delivered too slowly. To make matters worse, experts in the UK are suggesting the new variant of COVID-19, discovered last year in England, might be more deadly than previously thought. EU officials are concerned new variants of the disease might be resistant to approved vaccines and vaccines awaiting approval. With that comes obvious health concerns, but also incredible economic uncertainty. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
A latest report by the National Bureau of Statistics is that has found that large swaths of mostly young and highly educated Italians have continued to move abroad in search of working opportunities. Italy's young workers have been living for decades. However, the report has highlighted that over 300,000 Italians aged 18 to 39 emigrated to neighboring European countries and overseas between 2015 and 2019, up 33% compared to 2014. One in three of them were graduates.
These figures show that young Italians, particularly from the rich north, choose to leave the country because the labor market doesn't offer them any prospects. This is why young people from the depressed Italy south continue to emigrate to northern cities. We are calling on the government to invest more in the youth, in its recovery and resilience plan, the investment project using European Union funds to counter the effect of the pandemic.
Youth unemployment level in Italy stands at about 40%. Furthermore, 3 out of 10 Italians between 18 and 24 years of age are not in employment, education or training, the third highest percentage among OECD countries.
A recent study by the European Commission has found that Italy, along with Poland and Romania, is among the European countries that send the most workers abroad. This brain drain costs Italy an estimated 14 billion euros every year.
It's an inconceivable waste. Once trained through our school system, our young Italians offer their skills to foreign countries. It's true, our labor market is stagnant, but it must be said that quite often the system does not reward merit.
Successive Italian governments had long tried attracting back talented workers with tax breaks, with no success. However, a counter-exodus of the brain drain seems to be underway since the start of the pandemic. Data from Italy's foreign ministry shows that in 2020, the number of young Italians returning home increased about 20% over the previous year. Max Civili, Rome.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
Welcome to the futuristic world of facial recognition payment. It might sound like something from a science fiction movie, but this kind of transaction is already happening millions of times a day across China's major cities. With the technology now being introduced in the United States and other countries such as Denmark and Nigeria, are we all going to be using it within a few years' time? And are there data security and privacy issues that we should worry about? The article you're about to hear has been written by Richard Bainbridge. The piece is titled, Why Your Face Could Be Set to Replace Your Bank Card. Please stay with us for more of Richard Bainbridge's article. Sarah Stewart strolls into a small Mexican restaurant in Los Angeles, California, and orders a torta, a type of sandwich. To pay, she simply looks at her reflection in a small LCD screen attached to the cashier's counter. Then, to add her preferred amount of tip, she flashes a quick peace sign at the monitor. The entire process takes less than 5 seconds, and it's entirely contactless. Moreover, Sarah Stewart doesn't need to carry her mobile phone or bank card with her, or show any form of identification, or even enter a PIN number. Welcome to the futuristic world of facial recognition payment. It might sound like something from a science fiction movie, but this kind of transaction is already happening millions of times a day across China's major cities. With the technology now being introduced in the United States and other countries like Denmark and Nigeria, are we all going to use it within a few years' time? And are there data security and privacy issues that we should be concerned about? Sarah Stewart, an 18-year-old university student, says she has no such concerns. She says, I feel like technology is moving so fast that people don't even think twice about using something like this. She says, our phones already read our faces, and our faces already all over the internet. So I don't think it really makes much of a difference to someone's security. It's faster, it's more convenient, and it's safer, and you don't have to worry about leaving your phone or cards at home. She uses facial recognition payment via a US technology startup called PopID. You sign up via its website by uploading a photograph of your face, which is stored on the firm's cloud-based system. You then link your account to your bank card. In addition, you can choose to use PopID's hand gesture tipping tool. Sarah Stewart has set this at thumbs up for 10%, the peace sign for 15%, and a shaka or hand loose sign for 20%. Pop ID is based in Los Angeles, California, and is now used by about 70 independent restaurants and cafes across a handful of U.S. cities, mainly on the west coast of the United States. The firm's chief executive, John Miller, says, "Our view is that using your face to pay is no different than using your phone." John Miller says, "It's just another way to identify yourself. The digital picture taken at point of sale is destroyed immediately, and the data isn't shared with anyone. In fact, he argues that it's less intrusive than paying by your mobile phone, because a phone can track your location at all times via GPS or global positioning system. He adds that the photos stored by the Pop ID are mathematical maps of unique facial vectors, not actual photographs. Currently, Pop ID requires the user to temporarily lower his or her face mask, but the firm says it is updating its system so that this will not have to be done in the future. Some 7,000 miles away or 12,000 kilometers away in the Chinese city of Guangzhou, another student has facial payment technology on her mind. Ling, who did not wish to share her real name for fear of getting into trouble, says that it is now the only way to buy food from the vending machine in her accommodation block at Sun Yat-sen University in China. Unlike Sarah Stewart in Los Angeles, California, Ling in Guangzhou, China is far from happy about the rollout of the technology. Concerned about its ever-increasing encroachment into her daily life, she's refusing to use it, even if that means she cannot buy a late-night snack. She says, "Technology is like a tide. There's no way you can swim against it, but I also want to make a stand of some kind for as long as I'm able to do so." Technology in general is indeed a tide, then the rollout of facial recognition payment technology in China is something of a tsunami. Almost all 98% of mobile payments in China goes through just two apps: Alipay, owned by e-commerce giant Alibaba, and WeChat Pay, and both are racing to install their facial recognition systems across the country. Alipay is spending 3 billion yuan, or $420 million over 3 years, and according to Chinese state media, 760 million people will be using facial recognition payments by next year. Wang Bing, from the Luoyang Vocational College of Science and Technology in Henan Province in China, says the rollout has been fueled by the coronavirus pandemic. He says, "The experience of COVID was huge in China in terms of bringing people into facial recognition systems." He adds that the software and camera systems are so advanced that they are impossible to trick, such as by stealing someone's photograph. The technology can also differentiate between identical twins. But will the technology take off in the rest of the world? Brett King, an expert on the future of banking and payment systems, believes it will, unless governments choose to stop it. The author of a book called Banking 4.0 says that the exact measurements and features of your face are actually more secure than your account passwords. He says, "Facial payment is part of the growing digital identity structure. I appreciate the concerns about privacy, but the reality is that a face-based digital identity structure is inevitable for safety and security." He added, "Digital payments, digital transactions and services are becoming more and more embedded in our lives and in our world, and that's definitely going to require biometrics, because passwords are simply not secure enough." Brett King adds that many users of Apple phones are already happy to use facial recognition to access their handsets, and that the facial payment systems are just an extension of that. However, he says, US regulators may look at the technology. This comes at a time of increased concern about facial recognition systems in general. A handful of Democrats in U.S. Congress want to try to reintroduce a bill this year to prevent the technology being used by federal agencies, such as the FBI, to identify crime suspects. Pop ID's John Miller says he's in talks with the main card payment processing companies. They are said to see facial recognition payment as a way of bypassing mobile phone apps such as Apple Pay and Google Pay. John Miller says they don't want to be dependent on the phone because Apple is one company that can threaten them. He added, so the idea of moving the payment system straight from the card to the face is very appealing to them. Yet, John Miller admits that facial recognition payment is an idea that some will never accept. He says, there's a segment of the population that's never going to adopt it, no matter how much logic you go through about how it compares to the mobile phone, because for them, it's just psychological.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you.
From Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on a new episode of Muslim Lady. In the studio, of course, I have the honor of being with my friend, Sister Razia Shami. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. How are you?
I'm very well. So we've been talking about modesty, haya, and its manifestation, which is chastity. We've explained that modesty is much more than just covering yourself and lowering your gaze. Modesty is a sense of integrity and self-respect.
Previously, we said that you can have two kinds of categorization. If you want to look at the topic of haya, you can either look at the manifestation and the different aspects of a person's life, or you can look at who this observer is. Because if you remember, the first definition that we provided for modesty or haya was that a feeling of shamefulness because a respected observer is watching you. So who is this respected observer who is watching you? It depends to your level of dignity, to your level of depth of understanding. It could be random people. You know, you're so, because this random people that not, even this, like, I have to talk about it, because sometimes when you're with your family, when, like, you treat your wife in a really unrespected, rude way, but when you're in the society with other people, you talk to her well, you know, or vice versa. This lady disrespects her husband in the home, but when she's outside and she wants to have a very good presentation of herself and her life, she says, you know, she talks in a really nice and respectable way. So people are scared of other people judging them, so they try to make up a very good reputation of themselves. So this is the lowest type of modesty or haya. The second one was with regards to the angels, and we're going to talk about this based on the Quranic verses. I remember from elementary school that I still remember very clearly that when the day that they taught us that there is an angel on your left side and one on your right side, and when you do something good, the right hand angel writes it down and records it in your book of deeds. I mean, do something really bad, the left hand angel does it, right? So even in cartoons, you have this exactly. Angel, right-hand angel thing. And it really works. It's just like the cameras, the hidden cameras that are there. And you're always conscious, self-conscious, that someone is watching me. And imagine that this someone is there 24/7. And it's not just your apparent physical behavior, it's also your intentions, because at the end of the day, in Islamic teachings, they say
al-a'mal
bi-niyat.
Actions are rely on intentions.
Yeah. So sometimes, like, there's this person who doesn't have the money to give to poor people, but he has a really pure intention, and he says, oh, I wish I had money to help. And then there's another guy who's a millionaire, and he writes a check for, you know, a couple of millions of dollars for someone, but he does it because out of fame and out of, you know, gaining more prestige, or for, you know, to get a, for a relation, for some connections, because he wants to have a nice apartment or nice building built somewhere, and he needs some people to find out that this guy is a really good
charitable
person, so he does it. So that person actually didn't, I mean, donate anything and just had the intention, he gets the reward, he gets the actual reward, and this person who has spent so much money on charity would get nothing, because that was the purpose, the whole niyyah was wrong. So here, these angels are watching you, and there's another beautiful verse that we have two other angels who are guarding you. Yeah, one who's, just imagine, at every second of your life, you have four angels accompanying you everywhere that you go. You're never alone.
That's so uncomfortable.
But they're guarding you, you know? They're like your soulmate. And in this beautiful verse, it says, for his sake, there are angels following one another before him and behind him, who guard him by Allah's commandment. This is in chapter 50, verses number 17 and 18. So this is one kind of looking at the topic of haya, and on a deeper scale, the third level would be that alam ya'lam bi anna Allah yara.
Do you not know that Allah sees?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even if these angels are not there,
and the people are not there, and you're all alone in the privacy of your home,
he's
no one
watching.
Is spying on you, no one is going to judge you, he's still there watching. And you know, I think one would wonder, so what, that Allah watches? It's, number one, it's his job. Number two, he can. He's the all-seeing. I mean, what am I going to do? Where am I going to hide from his sight, you know? But I think it makes it complicated when we refer ourselves to other verses of the Quran where Allah says the smallest bit of good, the smallest bit of bad is presented to them, you know, thrown back at your face.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you wonder, is this what you want to be displayed of you on the day of reckoning? Is this what you want to be reminded? Is this moment something you want to be reminded of doing once you're resurrected from the grave? I think that's what makes it complicated, you know? Because mm-hmm. if we think that we're just aimless entities, that we're created by a god, the god sees everything we do, and then we die and turn to dust. So what if the god sees us? It's his job. But that's the thing. You turn into dust, but then you're put back together again. And everything you did is shown to you. That's when things are going to get really awkward and embarrassing.
And beyond that, so you're going to be shown.
Mm.
And so you're going to be humiliated.
Exactly.
After that, it's your eternal abode.
There we go.
It's going to last forever and ever and ever and ever. So if you're going to end up in a good place, it's going to be forever and ever. And if it's a bad place, ever and ever. So this, whatever you make out of yourself, whatever you develop, you build out of your personality, your character, your humanity. So this is, you know, it's actually the essence of life, that this life is just but a sowing ground for our next life, and we're going to sow whatever we have been putting in the ground, planting in the ground for ourselves.
And we'll reap the results of it in the hereafter.
But we keep forgetting.
We do.
And it's good to be reminded from time to time. That's why they say that go to the graveyard once in a while, once a week at least, you know, to see where you're going to end.
Exactly.
And it's not so far from you. And COVID-19 has taught us a good lesson, that so many people who were here not long ago are gone now, and you never know whether you're going to be here, living here in this world the next day. You know, it's good to remind ourselves.
And I think that's why the Quran refers to itself as dhikr or tadhkira, as reminder.
Exactly.
And if we look back at the whole concept of fitra, that innate, I don't want to call it nature, but again, at a loss for a better word, the English language is so restricting sometimes. Yeah. That innate, natural essence that we have, it was always within us. We just needed to be reminded again, you know? We got so distracted by the chaos and by the trauma and by the glitz and glamour of this material world that we kind of lost touch with our inner essence. And I think that's what's really important, to keep reminding ourselves. We're forgetful.
Yeah, that this is so true. At least it's good in the sense that if we were not forgetful, so many painful moments in our lives that have happened for all of us, it would have made us crazy, into psychos, right? To know that you still remember, oh my God, even some women are like that, they actually end up getting depressed, that, did you see what she told me? Did you see what happened to me? So it's actually good that we forget, but the essence of life, we have to keep it up, you know.
Reminding ourselves.
My Lord, show me right from wrong. Give me light, make me strong. I know the road is long. Make me strong. Sometimes it just gets too much. I feel that I've lost touch. I know the road.
So far, we've said that haya is good, it's in the Quran, it should be in all parts of our lives, and whom should we, you know, have this sense of embarrassment about? Okay, so what? What am I going to do with this, all information? Imagine, in other words, we want to highlight the procedure. We've been talking about the result so far, the beauties, the glamours, the benefits of having haya, the meaning of the benefits. So how can I go through a process whose end result would be a modest, chaste kind of child upbringing, or a kind of, you know, a chaste and a very virtuous family? So let's look at it from that aspect. One point that we've been saying that in the Islamic perspective, everything starts from the mindset, right? And we said that Quran is dhikr, it's a reminder. What does it remind you of? It reminds you of certain facts. Number one, wa nafsin wa ma sawwaha. First of all, it means that by the soul and him who fashioned it. So you are not like, you've been born with a soul and it's been fashioned or it's been designed in a specific way. It's been designed prior to your creation, right? It's not like it's like a jello, you just do whatever you want to do with it, right? It's like a chip that has certain potentials. If you use these potentials, good for you. If not, then you will encounter problems. Two, how has it been designed? فَأَلْهَمَهَا فُجُورَهَا وَتَغْوَاهَا. It is inspired, you know, it can discern, it can distinguish between virtues and vices. So innately, we can understand that what is good and what is bad. This is in our soul. Number one, knowing this. Quran tells you, you human being, this is how I have created you. Know this. Two, today they have something called relativism.
Yeah.
Good. It depends. Right? Can I do this? It depends. Is it good to live with an animal? It depends. Everything depends. But in the Islamic perspective, if this nafs has been proportioned in a certain way, so no, it's not like it depends. There is a value system. And you stick to this value system. They teach you the value system. The Quran teaches you. Three, How does it teach you to, let's go back to two. How does it teach you? It tells you that whoever man amila sayyatan fala yujza illa mislaha. That there's a world, there are some good things, there are some bad things. If you do something bad, you will see the result, not only in this world, but in the world to come. Whoever, the translation of the verse is that whoever commits a misdeed shall not be requited except with its like, and whoever acts righteously, whether male or female, should be faithful, they will enter paradise. So it tells you your ultimate end. What is good, what is bad, reward, punishment, ultimate end. Three, human being, mankind. Your quality is that we have certainly لَقَدْ كَرَّمْنَا بَنِي آدَمَ. You're not like an animal. You're not like a plant. You've been
favored.
Favored. You've been chosen over the angels. God showed his, he was asking about his names, and the angels couldn't answer, but Adam could. Right? So you've been chosen. This is the teaching method of the Quran. Four, you're being watched all the time. Imagine you put into your mind all this kind of information. And five, okay, I'm being watched. I know my value system. I know that I have a specific soul. There are role models. Other people have paved the way. Other people have gone through this way, and they have made it easy for you. It's not like a, oh, where am I going? What am I supposed to do?
A state of constant bewilderment. It's not like that.
Exactly. You know exactly what to do, in whose footsteps to put your foot. So inshallah, in our next episode, we will talk about some of the role models that we have been given, specifically with regards to the topic of haya and modesty.
Inshallah ta'ala. Thank you so very much for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Who is the lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. To Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity. Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female, and made us into nations and tribes, so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah, Muhammad is the messenger, to Allah is our return.
The Quran has indicated worthy women in history, just as it has mentioned such men, and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.